Homestyle Green, episode 207. What does a woman-centric approach to home design look like, and how does it benefit all of us, including us males? G'day and welcome back to another episode of Homestyle Green. This is the podcast dedicated to inspiring people to make a better place to live. A couple of weeks ago, I caught up with Natalie Wendling, who's the Executive Vice President of Design Basics, and also Paul Forsman, who's the Vice President of Business Development at Design Basics. And they were speaking to me about something that cropped up in a newsletter or press release that I saw about women-centric design. And I've had a few interviews with some great female designers, and I think they give a really unique perspective on not just the design process, but also the interaction with clients and listening to clients about their needs for a good functioning home. So let's pick up the interview. I started out by asking Natalie and Paul to introduce themselves. Neither of you are architects or from the building background, are you? You sort of come in from more of a marketing and business management side of things?
Yes, I personally am actually coming from more of a business, accounting, and legal background. So I formerly worked with political campaigns, doing fundraising and political campaigns, which then kind of led to working in some law firms. And I love to do research. So if anybody has a question or something here, they'll usually, if some research needs to be done, I'm kind of the person that will do quite a bit of that. So that is my background in accounting, and kind of stumbled into this industry, and it's just been a tremendous learning experience the few years that I have been involved. I mean, there's just so much to learn, and it's just growing and growing. So what about you, Paul?
Yeah, I had the privilege of starting here a little over 30 years ago. Yeah. And even before that, I was working for the advertising agency for our company here, Design Basics. So my background and time here has been spent on the marketing side, and it's been a roller coaster. It's been a rocket ship. It's been a lot of fun, tremendous amount of learning.
Yeah. Yeah, so quite diverse backgrounds. How did you, Paul, get into housing in general? What attracted you to that in the first place?
Well, again, I started working with this advertising account. I was about 5 years with a couple of advertising agencies here in town, and this was obviously a company on the rise. And as they began to use more and more of my services from the advertising agency side, it just became evident that it made more sense for me to come to work here full time. And so, again, that was about 30, 31 years ago when that all transpired.
Yeah, so you would have both seen some pretty big ups and downs in that time. You're going through one now, as we were just talking about. You know, you're about to try and relocate and work from home. But, you know, going back to 2008 and probably even prior to that, the early 2000s, there were a couple of ups and downs as well. What's been the biggest challenges in your industry during that period?
Well, actually, our company was founded in 1983 at the height of one of the housing recessions. And here in the United States, mortgage interest rates were hovering around 17 to 18%. Wow. Yeah. It was really a devastating time.
Good time to start a design company.
Yeah. And the gentleman that started it, you know, he was working out of his basement. It was traditional entrepreneurial startup. He spent his life savings to get the company going. And then 3 years later, to stretch beyond just serving the custom builders and home buyers here in the Omaha, Nebraska area, a Small Business Administration loan allowed him to get together a series of plans for a plan book and national distribution. And, you know, by the early 1990s, We were recognized as, Inc. Magazine, one of the 500 fastest growing companies, and just won all types of awards for marketing, for business management, for home design, for customer service. And we really couldn't hire fast enough.
What led to that early success? What was the thing that set Design Basics apart in those early days?
Self-publishing. So at that time, back in 1989, 1991, there were no other prominent residential design firms that were publishing their own magazines. And so we began a direct mail marketing effort where we would send, 50 to 100,000 copies every 3 months to builders throughout North America, where we would feature our plans as well as some of the leading experts in various aspects of home building business. So people talking about customer service and talking about marketing expertise and warranty service and how to do walkthroughs more effectively. And so we were publishing great content to home builders and showcasing our designs and profiling some of the builders who were building from our designs, and it was a very successful way to rapidly scale up our company.
You were doing content marketing before content marketing was a thing.
We might have been a little ahead of the curve on that.
If I may just interject here really quick, too, I wasn't here, so Paul's definitely the expert on that. But we do have some folks that still build from our early designs. And wow. So in addition to everything that Paul just mentioned, we do have people calling in and still, requesting to order some of those plans from the early 90s or kind of mid 90s. So, I think, like I said, everything that Paul just mentioned is extremely important. And really, they just had amazing home design. And so I think that was also really popular for us.
So your client in that picture is the builder more than the ultimate homeowner? You selling to the builder?
Most of the companies in our industry will target the home buyer through publications and through websites. Mm-hmm. And so their plans are available on numerous, we call them plan broker websites. And some of the publishers were Better Homes and Gardens and House Beautiful and Home Magazine. And that and the newsstand distribution of home plan publications was huge until about, maybe the last half dozen years or so. The internet finally took the wind out of the sails of the home plan publications to the consumer.
Right.
But our focus was originally on the home builder, and we've never lost that focus. We do cater very successfully to home buyers, but we'll never lose that affinity for working with the professional builders.
And in our industry, in this part of the world, building companies have their book of plans, but they never really get built as those plans because the buyer will make changes. Is that the case there, or are those plans usually built as they are?
We have a significant number of changes. We do home plan personalization. So, mm-hmm. If people want a garage a certain way, or if our plans are slab standard or basement standard and they want something different, or we need to expand some rooms or change anything. We do quite a few changes. We also have custom home plans as well. So if someone can't quite find what they're looking for in our portfolio that we have with a couple of changes, we do those customs as well.
Right.
But yeah, we do a significant amount of customization with our portfolio plans, wouldn't you say?
Absolutely. And on top of that, we have a kind of unique licensing program for our designs. Someone can order the CAD files, and then we allow them to make changes if they have the capability locally. And so a lot of times we're selling the plan as originally designed and they're modifying it on their end. But a surprising number of home builders respect the design that we have created. And when they're building the home on a speculative basis, in other words, there's not a contract already in place for the home, they'll build it very, very close, if not exactly, to the way we originally designed it.
Yeah, right. Now, one of the things that first attracted me to get in touch was the one of your media releases that was talking about women-centric home design. So, Natalie, describe for us what that exactly is.
Well, through doing some focus groups and research, Design Basics found that women make a majority of the decisions in the home, whether it's kind of from a design aspect or touring a home or that sort of thing. Women really do make a majority of the decisions. And, you know, women have enormous buying power right now and have for many years. And so Design Basics thought, okay, if women are the ones that are, you know, looking at the home when they walk in with their lens, what is it that they are seeing? What is it that they are looking for? How can we help them and figure out how this home lives for them and their family? And so that's what woman-centric home design essentially is about, is looking at it through the lens of how the home can live, how it will help them. For example, my husband and I love to entertain. And so when I look at home plans, I look at them for lots of entertaining space. Mm-hmm. And we highlight certain aspects of that. We highlight certain plans that have, if storage is very important to some people, you know, we highlight plans that have lots of storage available. So just helping people find something that will work for them and their family. It's, you know, our plans, and they're not only different, but it's better for the family. You're not just buying something that will work for anyone. You're buying something that will work for you and your family. So we really kind of focus on those preferences, and that's where our design comes from.
You've hit on two of your livability at a glance features there. Yes. So entertaining and storage. How did that concept come about? And do you want to walk us through that model?
That actually goes back to some of the original research. It was really back in January 2003. It was kind of an aha moment. And we came to appreciate the influence that women were having in terms of design, in terms of the product choices in the home, what builder, what neighborhood, everything about the home. And so as we started doing more research, more focus groups, we did some immersive research. We basically almost moved in with some of the folks that were willing to talk with us, and we would look at how they're functioning in the home, and we would notice things that they've managed to do, or they just put up with, that were obvious design flaws. And this really helped us identify those four lenses: the entertaining and the storing, what we call flexible living, and then those areas that also are really great for de-stressing, whether that means relaxing and peace and quiet, or more of a it could be meditation, it could be exercise, it could be rejuvenation, or kind of reinventing themselves.
Sorry, go ahead, Natalie.
I was going to say, we also try to think of things that you don't necessarily think about until it becomes a problem. So kind of some common sense solutions: not placing doorways in front of a stairwell, not making an island so large where if you have the dishwasher in a certain place, nobody can get past. So those are kind of, when Paul was talking about how it lives, how it functions, we really try to think about strategic placement of items such as that.
Mm-hmm. It's an interesting list, those four items, because it might be a combination of my background, but maybe it is or male lens as well. But none of those are things that came to my mind straight away. That if you asked me what are the most important things about a house, I would talk about insulation and location and orientation, those sorts of things. So I really love those ideas of particularly things like de-stressing and the flexible living. It seems a bit more holistic and a bit more of a higher level view of what the function of a house is.
I think that's fair. We might actually use a phrase, it's more of a whole-brained approach.
Yeah.
I'm not trying to be sexist in this regard, but most engineers are men, and most architects are men. Most of the home builders are men. In fact, most of the building tradespeople are men, and yet she's making the bulk of the decisions and ultimately whether or not they're going to buy that new home. And so the better we can understand how she's looking at a home's design in terms of its suitability for her and her household, how they want to live in the home, the better the design is going to be for them. And so that that started us down a few years of pure research. And then we basically launched this idea that we call woman-centric home design.
Yeah, I mean, clearly the research has been a big part of this, and you've spent a lot of time and energy doing that. I'm interested, were there differences in the responses you got when you just asked people versus the observation when you actually went and spent time in their home and saw what they were doing?
Absolutely. It's hard for somebody to think of something that they don't have.
Yeah.
Sometimes they can tell us what the issue is, what the problem is, and then as designers, it's our job to come up with solutions for those things.
Yeah.
But it's really hard for somebody to envision something that, you know, try 30 years ago envisioning a cell phone and what we can do with those today.
Yeah. Yeah, well, you mentioned observing people coping, and I guess that's the skill of the designer, is to observe a practice where someone has just found a workaround or just got used to something being the way it is, and you thinking maybe there's a better way of doing this. They're not necessarily going to say, oh, I wish I had this. That's the design role, right, to identify that situation is not ideal and then come up with a solution for it.
Yeah, I think we try to focus on that. We try to focus on proactive design. So before it even reaches someone where they have to just kind of deal with it or find a workaround, you know, we try to think of what are some potential problems that could be here, and how do we not even, you know, have those enter the picture for the home buyer. So, I think that kind of thought process is part of the design process.
Yeah, we did a focus group of moms of elementary age school kids, and we found out for them nothing was more stressful than getting the entire family out the door on time in the morning with everything.
Yeah.
And so
I've got three kids, I can relate to that.
Yeah, they helped us understand their kids knew how to use lockers at school.
Yeah.
And so we started designing the entry between the garage into the home to often have lockers or individualized cubby areas. And so at 7:30 in the morning, the kids pass by that on their way to school, and you know that's where they're going to get their lunch or their lunch money and their book bag and their science project and the gym clothes. And it's not, you know, Mom, Dad, have you seen my? No, because it's all staged there. So that actually helps de-stress the morning by providing the storage and organization that works.
Yeah.
Similarly, we found that very few things were more stressful for ladies than coming home and walking into the home from the garage through the laundry room with piles of laundry that are either waiting to be folded and taken to the bedrooms or, worse yet, haven't been washed. And, you know, if your son's gym clothes from the day before are still there, that's really a kind of aroma that you may not care for.
Yeah, yeah. And that's your welcome to welcome home is a reminder of jobs to do.
Yep.
Right.
Is the, I mean, this is sort of fairly traditional roles that we're talking about here. Is that changing now? Are we getting more, like, for example, I share some of the domestic duties. I love to cook, and I've just come back from dropping the kids off at school. Is that happening more and more where the roles of males and females in the house are changing and being shared more?
I believe so. My husband and I have a six-month-old, and we share those duties. I'm not doing that by myself. Mm. So he loves to cook. In fact, he's actually better at it than I am, and I am happy to admit that and happy to let him cook. So I think, you know, looking at it from that perspective and a shared perspective, you're still able to apply a lot of the same design elements. I know my husband Ryan doesn't want to walk through a laundry room any more than I do. And, you know, kind of thinking about when we bring in our groceries, when we park the car in the garage, if we have a handful of groceries and we're trying to carry Lily, how far our kitchen is from our garage and walking in to set down those groceries. And so I think it's definitely becoming more of a shared approach, a shared lens. We still see that women make a lot of the majority of the decisions, but I don't think it's quite so black and white as it used to be.
What's interesting in that regard is when we're talking with couples, and we do that a lot, it's a little more difficult to get really useful information from the guys.
Right.
And once ladies understand we're really after their opinion, we're really after their suggestions, we're giving them permission to maybe look at this design and tear it apart and what would you do differently, then she's often more willing to open up and to have looked at the design through the lens of everyone in her household. And we still find that guys are a little more self-centered, and they tend to be looking at the design a little bit more as how they're going to live and interact in that home without maybe as holistic of a viewpoint.
They're looking for their man cave?
Oh, yes. Absolutely.
Just on that point, are there some sort of standout tips or suggestions or common themes that often come out? You've mentioned storage is one big thing, but what are some of the things that people typically do to improve a design?
Well, we mentioned those four lenses, but it's really kind of dictated by what the individual's primary lens is.
Right.
My wife, when we designed and built a home a few years ago, one thing that was extremely important to her was natural light. And so while we probably spent the same amount of money as our neighbors did on the window package in our home, we'll have standard size, reasonably priced windows on at least two sides of just about every room in our house, whereas some of our neighbors have some absolutely stunning, beautiful window groupings. But, you know, it's just a different prioritization. So we need to know what is more important to the individual. We've never designed a home that had too big of a pantry in the kitchen or too big of walk-in closets.
Yeah.
So storage is an issue for folks, but different people might prioritize spending money on a organization system or products maybe within their kitchen. Mm-hmm. And some of the wonderful storage and organization amenities within the kitchen, whereas other people might spend some of those dollars on something that's more geared toward creating a wow first impression, or towards the entertaining, or really creating that spa owner's bathroom.
Yeah.
A couple of things that we have found that people do really like. We've recently started doing, or really heavily focusing on dual master suites. kind of on the same level. And then also getting away from putting bathtubs in some of the master suites. Paul has a fun statistic that 78%, I believe 78% of people don't bathe. And it sounds a little skewed, but it's 78% of people don't take baths.
Yeah.
Most people bathe, but they bathe in the form of a shower rather than taking a bath. And so that's, you know, bathtubs take up a large space in a bathroom. So kind of removing that and allowing for either a large walk-in or roll-in shower, kind of dual vanities, something like that is definitely becoming more popular.
And is that true for young families as well, even with young children that don't want a bath for the kids?
There does need to be a tub somewhere in the home. Most of the homes that we design are going to have two or more bathrooms. And so now, I guess the tipping point was when realtors started telling us that regardless of the presence of a tub in the owner's bath, if it doesn't have a really nice shower, buyers are just moving on to the next house. And so that's, you know, again, with the majority of American adults not using a tub. I had a number of ladies, they were mentioning things like, I'm tired of dusting the tub. You know, we've had a tub in our home for 5 years. I've used, I've taken a bath three times. I remember one lady said, I don't like the idea of soaking in my own dead skin cells.
Yeah, that's an interesting way of putting it.
Definitely.
Yeah. So, I mean, the purpose of Homestyle Green is centered around sustainability, and I see a potential conflict of increasing size, particularly when you mentioned there's no such thing as a too small a pantry or a walk-in wardrobe, and these things, and adding the second, third bathroom. Is there a consciousness of making houses too big or adding too much or people wanting to be a bit more resource efficient?
We've actually found in the past year or a couple of years that square footage really actually has gone down for preference, at least with our plans, rather than getting larger, their preference is to go smaller. And so what we are doing is, well, like Paul mentioned, you can never have too big of a pantry or too big of a walk-in closet. It's strategic placement. So we still like to offer all the amenities or as many amenities as we can in these houses, but they just have a smaller footprint. And we also, our senior designer here, Carl Cuzzo, is really focusing a lot on value engineering. Doing the value engineer build. So it's more economical for the builders to build and construct. And so, you know, if you have those home buyers that you can do, you know, green products or kind of environmentally safe products, having that smaller footprint is definitely a lot easier. What do you think, Paul?
Yeah, we've got we've got a number of builders around the country who have asked us to help them do a better job of understanding women's preferences in the home. And some of those builders are really doing a superb job in constructing high-performance homes. One of our builders is a gentleman by the name of Hugh Fisher. He's in Warwick, Rhode Island. And they're just completing a nine-home, a little subdivision of net-zero-ready homes. Now, Hugh explains it that it's not a science problem, it's a math problem, because while he can get the homes net zero ready, and that added, he said, about $17,000 to the price of the home and brought the energy consumption way, way down, to get it all the way to net zero to where it was not consuming any more power than what it was able to generate through solar, the additional solar investment couldn't cash flow. Right. And so, again, his I love his phrase, it's not a science problem, because building science can get us there, but it is a math problem, because a lot of folks just don't go beyond that financial payback. You know, how long do I have to live in the home for it to make financial sense?
Yeah.
And so that's kind of a struggle for us.
Yeah, yeah. But it sounds like people are becoming more conscious of that and adding that to the mix alongside those lenses and other features that they desire.
Right, right. Another one of our builders taking this woman-centric approach is just east of St. Louis. And every one of the woman-centric homes they're building does include solar, because they have found that their buyers are both environmentally and energy conscious and want to do the right thing and are able, based upon how tight they're building the homes, and every home gets a predictive energy analysis, and then every home is tested, blower door tested, once it's finished. So they've been able to make the financial sense out of the principal, interest, taxes, insurance, and utilities. So looking at total monthly housing costs, buyers are money ahead the day they move in. Yeah. Their actual monthly expenditure for housing is less by building the high-performance home. And that's getting traction for those folks.
Does that blower door testing occur? Is that nationwide, or is that just in that region?
That's just that builder.
Oh, right, right. So that's something that they're doing as a standard.
Right. C.A. Jones on all of their homes there in that East St. Louis area, they're all being blower door tested, yes.
Are you starting to see that in more regions across the country?
I'm not hearing about it, other than our builders who typically are doing foam insulation or building ICF homes or building structural insulated panel designs, but that's something that kind of separates design basics a little bit too. We've got well over 100 plans that we've designed for ICF construction. Wow. And now there are 50 or 60 for structural insulated panels, and those are some of the most heavily trafficked areas on our website, are people looking for high performance homes. So it's definitely in the consciousness. It usually comes down to that cost trade-off. You know,
yeah.
Do I have to give up, you know, stone countertops, granite countertops, in order to get the high performance home? And you know, they know what's behind the drywall, but their friends, their visitors don't.
Yeah.
And so it's a tough trade-off sometimes.
Do you think the driver for that high performance is energy and savings, or is it more to do with health and comfort?
I think it's a little bit of both. I think the main driver, though, is the savings. But I do think, especially now, the idea of having a healthier home, better air quality, is something that people are starting to pay more pay more attention to. So yeah. Paul and I both just attended a seminar where that was a big focus for that particular builder, and they have a whole neighborhood, and you know, none of the children in that neighborhood have reported allergies. And so
wow.
It is something I think that people are definitely thinking about, whether they're going to make that their biggest decision maker or not, I think is yet to be seen. I think right now, though, a lot of people are focused on that energy savings.
Yeah.
I would agree. I mentioned that my wife and I had a home built for us a few years ago, and we chose to use Isonine spray foam insulation to create a very tight home. My wife and all four of our kids suffer from asthma and some allergies. We did not realize going into it, but after we moved into the home, we basically cut our family dependence on maintenance and rescue meds for the asthma in half. And so the quality of life that came from having a high performance home, you know, when you can breathe, life is a beautiful thing.
Yeah, and I don't like to, I don't really want to bring it up, but, you know, as more people self-isolate and spend more time in their homes, you know, maybe they'll be a little bit more conscious of that indoor air quality.
You're right. I hadn't thought about that.
Yeah.
Neither.
Yeah. Just before we wrap up, if there's one thing that either of you could change about the building industry and particularly the design aspect of that, what would that be? What would you like to see change in the industry?
One thing that I see that actually is already changing that I really like is there is a push to get not only more awareness for tradespeople, but women in the trades.
Yeah.
Women have a totally different perspective and way that they do things and mm-hmm. way that they approach projects and tasks. And so really promoting women in the trades and women in the industry, I think it can definitely use some more traction, but the conversation is definitely there. People are talking about it. It's getting some airtime, and I think that that's really important.
Mm-hmm. And what about you, Paul?
I would echo that, but I would point the finger a little bit more specifically, maybe at our industry, the residential design aspect, because I fear that too often our egos get in the way. And we really need to do a great job of listening and especially appreciating women's preferences in the home. I mean, that's just made all the difference in the world in terms of how we design today and what we understand to be, the really important criteria for creating great home plans. And the marketplace has voted with their dollars. They like our woman-centric home designs.
Yeah, I mean, clearly it's been successful. The any company that's been around for that period of time and weathered the ups and downs and come out as a very strong company is definitely doing something right. So where can people go to find out more information about what you do?
You can go to our website. It's www.designbasics.com. We have all of our home plans on there. They can learn all about woman-centric design, our marketing program, Woman-Centric Matters. They can learn about our Finally About Me quiz, our Livability at a Glance quizzes, and really help them kind of see what their lens is and how they identify with what's important to them on home plans. So everything's on our website.
Yeah, you've got some great tools there, as you mentioned, for people, even if they're just starting on that journey to design. And I think it asks some really good questions about what's important to people.
Thank you. We also, we're on Facebook and we are also on Instagram, and we do have some polls up there. And so we love getting feedback from people as to, you know, what do they prefer if we have a poll going, you know, this plan or that plan or different amenities. And so we really like to know kind of what people are thinking, and that's how we can continue to evolve our design and grow. So, yeah.
Great. Well, thank you both for your time, and it's been a pleasure talking to you about your point of difference and your journey. So, yeah, keep in touch, and we'll look out for more success in the future.
Awesome. Thank you for having us.
Thanks, Matthew. We appreciate this time too.
And that was Natalie Wendling, who's the Executive Vice President, and also Paul Forsman, who's Vice President of Business Development at Design Basics in Omaha. They provide their design services nationwide across America. And I thought it was very interesting to catch up with them to talk about that importance of a woman's perspective on the design process and the discrepancy between decisions made about the home and lack of representation by women in the design and also trades and construction sectors. I think that's an issue that we have here in New Zealand, Australia, probably around the world as well. So fascinating that they have created such a successful business around that concept and pivoting with those changing demands. Love to know your thoughts on that and other interviews on the show. You can reach out to me, Matthew@homestylegreen.com. Love to hear from you. Thank you very much for tuning in. Now go make a better place to live.